Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to AVFC Extra, a no-nonsense look at the club we all love. Brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast.
Hello and welcome to AVFC Extra, another dose of Aston Villa into your podcast feed directly from the team at Claret and Blue. I'm James Rushton, and today I'm joined by Tony Daly, none other than Tony Daly, Aston Villa superstar himself, because he's not just one of the most nicest people in football, but he's one of the most fittest people in football. Yeah, throughout his career, he's shown his fitness capabilities on and off the pitch in his time as a sports scientist and fitness coach at Wolves, not just playing football throughout his career, but helping footballers get to the best of their abilities in terms of fitness. So myself, Dan Rowlandson and Tony Daly will be talking all things fitness. Of course, I don't think me and Dan have got much input on that all, to be fair. It's going to be all Tony Daly. So without any further ado and any more fuss, here's Tony Daly speaking about what it means to be fit and ready for football.
Can you just explain what it is that you do at the moment with the Seven Daily and what that brand is and what your involvement in that is?
Yes, it's a fitness brand. Been involved in it now for the past 2 or 3 years. This last year or so that we've actually pushed this now. We provide online training and training one-to-one to the masses. We also provide a range of supplement brands that are for everybody, you know, ranging from vitamin C to protein and recovery shakes.
Do you want to get back into coaching at all, Tony? Getting back into a role at a football club? Are you happy kind of doing your own thing and kind of charting your own path?
Yeah, I've been involved in football a very long time as a fitness coach. Was it 14 years? And I won't lie, left Wolves, would have been 3 years ago now, I was desperate to get back into football. And for whatever reason, it was the wrong place, the wrong time. Numerous circumstances, and about 3 or 4 offers at a time, it just never worked out. It never happened. And at this time, I set up a business at a particular time with Dave Barnett, ex-pro player. We went into training footballers, which was really successful, something I really enjoyed doing that one-to-one side, having control. And I haven't looked back at it as well. You know, I've had no burning desire to come back in football. Do not get me wrong, you know, if someone came calling, I'd be more than interested because, you know, it's a big part of my life and something I really enjoy. Training elite players, making that 1 or 2% difference and having that environment, especially from a football environment, you know, it's in your blood. Well, what I'll tell you now, working with Joe Public, you know, and still working with some footballers as well, I get the best of both worlds at the present moment, which is something I'm really, really enjoying.
Obviously, you were at Wolves, weren't you? I think it was a performance and fitness coach was your title then. How different was that in terms of dealing with footballers and dealing with people? You know, Joe Public, like you just said, are they prima donnas, these footballers?
Oh, absolutely not. Working with people who want to strive to be the best. So the challenging thing is the other way around, where I'm working with the general public mostly now, and you're cajoling them to be that. The players, they want to be the best. You know, they come for you for extra training. They have a buzz and a desire to be the best. And for me, the hard part is you're making only 1 or 2% with those players in terms of their strength, speed, agility. You know, that 1 or 2% could be a massive difference. Whereas working with who I'm working with now, the general public, as you put it, you know, can make 10, 20, 30, 40% difference in what they're doing. With eating correctly, exercising correctly. But what I've tried to do is keep the same principles I had working with elite footballers and in terms of the training regimes and fitting it into that, and it seems to work quite well. I've had very good success with it, so you know, I'm really, really pleased how that's going.
Nice. I think one thing you'd be pleased through your career is you said on a podcast you wanted to be the fittest person at the club that you was at, no matter if it was Villa or Wolves. You wanted to be the fittest guy at the club, right? So how difficult is getting to that fitness? I guess that starts at pre-season, right? How difficult is a pre-season routine?
Pre-season routine for football players is one of the most, it's hardest. It's kind of changed now. We've gone through COVID now, pre-COVID, but in any sense, it's the hardest thing a player has to go through. Players notoriously hate pre-season because of the workload that's there. You know, so, I mean, it's now the train early morning, in the afternoon, sometimes into the you know, late afternoon as well, three times a week for the next 6 weeks. It's tough. But I mean, my pre-seasons were brutal, especially under Graham Taylor. You know, it was deep, but I loved pre-season. I was just crazy. I love the fact of the running, strength work, that, you know, something I really, really crave for. And it was difficult. Always the other way, it's difficult for me to have that rest during that. You know, I felt on this fitness, which isn't the case now, if I didn't do anything during the pre-season. So I used to work all the way through, which can be detrimental because you actually do need to work. But, you know, pre-season for players is really, really, really tough. But this is the, you know, the groundwork. This is a foundation for the whole of the rest of the season. And if you don't get that right, if you miss training or you don't get the right fitness, you're playing catch up for the rest of the season.
You've already mentioned fitness making at a 1-2% difference in football squads. It's almost become a little bit of a cliche that, you know, the minimum requirement should be that you run harder than the other team. But, you know, being fitter is a genuine advantage, isn't it?
I think it is. And what happened before this was that the teams who come up, your Sheffield United, your Aston Villas, you know, teams like that, who are going to struggle against your Liverpools, your Man Cities, your Man Uniteds, the top teams, they are technically gifted. They're going to kick the ball 60-70% of the game, especially playing away from home. You have to be physically fit to chase the ball, win the ball and everything else like that. But what's happened now is that those teams now, I've just mentioned Man City, Man United, Liverpool, not only are technically fantastic, but also super fit as well. So they have that advantage as well. If you see them as well, when they lose possession of the ball, they're, you know, they're back on it straight away. They're not give you a breather. And it takes a lot of effort and hard work. And we look at the league side now, you know, they haven't got the best players. They've got a really good team, a really good system, the way they play, and they've got a good team shape and everything else. But what gets them through is their high press, the way they press, the consistent, not just defensive, but up front as well. Offensive, they're fantastic as well. And that needs hard training, that needs conditioning. The body has to be really resilient to that. The reason why Leeds, probably for a couple of seasons before that, struggled to go up, and the way they were playing the season before that, is because the amount of games they're playing. I do believe that they'll do well in this league because of the less amount of games they have to play. Not so much keen with playing Saturday, Tuesday. You know, they'll be able to keep that intensity going.
Coming off the back of that, I wanted to speak about this idea of 100% fitness is full fitness. Like, Tony, what is full fitness? What does it feel like to be fully fit? And, you know, how long can you stay at full fitness?
I'll tell you something now. I don't think there's any player, I can talk about myself and then talk about other players as well, looking at, you know, the GPS data that we have as well. You're probably 100% fit, probably, I would say, a couple of weeks in the season. I first mentioned you want to peak for the first game of the season. Even then, you're not, because it can take you 2-3 games to get in that. Then you're putting your body through a lot of stress and strain. You know, you play Saturday, you know, it's a massive game, you recover, sometimes it'll be a big game. So you're never 100%, but what you've got to be doing is, once you recover correctly, your nutrition's good, you get yourself up to as much as possible, but then you're always carrying injuries, you've got knocks, you've got bruises and everything else, you're never 100% fit. You might feel, yeah, you'll feel great today and everything else, but very, very rarely that you are. But when you do have that peak, when you actually do feel, you know, you're in that zone where you're 95% plus, it is a fantastic feeling. You know, you feel you can run all day. And the thing now as well is this isn't just guesswork now. All teams will have GPS systems, all players that are monitored individually. They'll have all their ranges that have to go. Because it's not all about battering players. We go back to pre-season. It's not about battering players in terms of, you know, you've got to run. Because I'll give you a perfect example. If you're doing a particular run and we know that centre-halves, for instance, don't have to cover the same distance as your attacking full-backs or your wide midfield players, for instance. So in any form of running, they would be doing not as many runs and not in the same intensities, or that they won't have to cover the same high distance run as the wide players do, because they have to be conditioned for that position. So, you know, it's taken as individual as that as well. They've been looking at their football stats as well. So, you know, for current season, they know particular player runs this particular amount of distances, covers so many sprints, and they'll be looking at that individual player, so they know that his stats are down. There's a reason he's not fitting us, he's carrying an injury, so they'll go into it as much as that as well. It's time to rest the player as well. There's so many different ways of doing that as well, but also the key is his recovery. Most players now, once you get into the likes of November, December, it's all about just playing and recovering. The most important other people are the ones who are the squad players, because they'll be just, you know, they'll be involved and come on 10 minutes here and there. And it's difficult as well, because the manager might think, oh, you know, don't train him too hard, because we might play him on, say, a game Saturday, you know, and it's possibly some condition to work after. Well, don't train too hard, because we're going to need him on the Wednesday. And that can go on for 2, 3, 4 weeks before, you know, that player starts to get deconditioned. And then you bring that player into the game now, and all of a sudden you're wondering why. Well, he hasn't played for 4 weeks, should be running around like anything, and he picks up an injury, or he's not fit enough. That is the reason why. That's eradicated now, because no matter what, the players have to reach certain parameters, certain criteria to reach. So if they don't play a particular game, they know they have to complete certain amount of high speed running, certain amount of distance covered, certain number of sprints, certain metabolic loads that they look at as well, to keep them in tip-top form. Even if they know that players can be playing on the Wednesday, for instance, or Tuesday following the game on Saturday, and he had about 30 minutes in the game, and it keeps up playing tip-top form. They're the most important players. The ones who are playing week in, week out, they look after themselves. You know, if they've had a good pre-season, they're playing the football once, twice a week, to take care of their fitness.
It's really interesting, because we've got a list of questions that we were going to ask you anyway, and my next one on here was about how, you know, squads are massive, aren't they, in football these days? You've got 25 plus players. Mm-hmm. If someone is on the bench and fleeting in and out of games, like kind of how Hanford Villa is a perfect example of someone who will have two or three games and then be dropped a bit and then come back in again, how do you even get round that as an issue of keeping fit? Is it just down to the individual to have to put the work in the gym and stuff like that?
No, absolutely not. The fitness coach or fitness coaches will be on to these players straight away. They will be given designated runs they have to do. So they'll probably have a training session. And in that training session, if they don't reach the right parameters, because they'll instantly tell them what distances they've covered, as we explained before, the sprints, high speed running, accelerations, decelerations, the fitness coach will take them aside and actually make them do additional if needed. Conversely, otherwise, if they've done too much, you will tell them that's enough to do, or, you know, they'll let them that they've done enough. But it's important that those players are kept fit for those particular reasons coming into games. And what you'll see now is that those players will remain in top condition, not just that as well, and not just condition wise, but also strength wise as well, which is absolutely critical.
What happens if some of these players kind of don't enjoy that gym work? I guess it is hard. Not everyone is going to enjoy the conditioning work that goes into being a footballer, but they kind of understand the importance of it. It's like kind of your job spec, isn't it, to be fit for your matches and fit for training. So do they all understand the importance of it? I guess everyone's different though, Tony.
The players have to buy into what the manager, how the manager wants to play. And it's no use player going, well, I don't want to do that. But you're not going to fit in the manager's team, because he wants you running up and down like this. He wants you to be able to get your accelerated decelerations. All those conditioning work, all that team work, you have to do it. And if you don't, you're not going to be able to sort of tell the players, you're not going to be in the team. And some love it, like self as a player. Others, it's hard work, but they do understand it and they work to do it and they know they need to do it. And, you know, like anything else, there's players like strength, there's players that just enjoy the football side, some players enjoy the strength work and not so great in terms of the technical side and everything else, but in general, you know, they will get that work done.
So I think that's a lot harder then with the situation we've just been through a lockdown where the football season was kind of cut off and then resumed after a period. So how would have these footballers have kept that fit during lockdown?
Very difficult. They would have been given, I think it's been noticed as well, they've been given programmes to take away. But the difficulty with this was that they didn't know they were either going to come back. When we started, we go back all the way back to March, end of March when it was, are they going to come back in 2 weeks? What are we going to be doing? So there was no, what you have to do when you have a regime in terms of football, you have a build up to when you're going to be playing. So the test increases or decreases depending on where you are. As a footballer, when you're coming back now during the lockdown, you know what you're doing. So the sessions were general. We just kept them ticking over in terms of that now. And that's good and well. But you've got to, the only way players can get fit to play football is to be doing sport-specific football sessions, and that's including with the ball. When I talk about conditioning, you know, gone are the days where, you know, you're running 10-mile distances through forests and up hills and everything like that. They really don't exist now. The majority of the fitness conditioning work is done with the ball. And, of course, there's going to be specific sessions where, in terms of where you want to get your high-speed running in, where you are going to specific high-intensity running and sprints. But in the main, it's done in a football environment. And, of course, the players, when they were not able to do that. So my biggest fear was that, yes, the players have kept to maintain the fitness because they would do, they'd be given specific programmes, was the fact that, you know, they had 2 weeks really to come back and start post-lockdown. And my biggest fear was players picking up injuries. That was the one, and it was natural as well. So I think, you know, everything was done regarding that. The 5 substitutes, for instance, was fantastic for me. It was an outstanding thing to do. You saw the beginning of the games. The games were like practice games as well. Yes, atmosphere didn't help. Of course, didn't. But I had the opportunity actually watching the games live. I was doing commentary for Villa at that particular time and watching games at Villa Park. And the first couple of games were literally like a pre-season game. You know, there was no intensity to the games. But as the season progressed, the post-lockdown season progressed, the player became fitter, stronger, and, you know, and he got more into where they were at that particular season. But yes, it's been very, very difficult. And even now it was as well, because the way the season had been spaced out, you know, they finished there, they're back again, but they didn't play many games, in many pre-season games at that particular time, because where players really do get their fitness. So for me, the way the season has gone as well, I think it's been really good, the way the condition, especially looking at the Premier League as well, the condition the players have done. I think looking at Malcolm Aston Villa, the I remember seeing a pre-season game, their last pre-season game they played against Man United, I think it was, and they were looking lean, sharp. I was so impressed. It didn't surprise me how the start of the season put on it. So I think you know, the fitness coaches there, the conditioning coaches, physio have done a fantastic job there for them to do that, because it's really, you know, the difficulty was getting them peak and ready for the start of the season. And I thought, looking at Oakwood, Aston Villa, I think they were outstanding, and they look lean and hungry.
With the way that football came back with Project Restart and the shortened pre-season, do you think that from the outside looking in, I think there's two ways that goes. Either players didn't really lose any fitness over the summer because they carried on playing so many games, so that shortened pre-season means that they're already ready to go for this season, or that they didn't have a sufficient break, and that means that they might be more susceptible to injuries now. Which side do you think it is more likely to fall on this season?
I think it's going to fall on the fact that they've come back, and I mean, there's been goals galore, and I think they've come back looking pretty good in terms of watching the games and quality of games as well. There's been a lot of goals being scored, but I just think that's just down to at defending, isn't it, really? But attacking, to be quite honest with you, I don't think it's down to anything fitness-wise. So that shorter break has probably helped the players there. But what you're going to find near the end of the season is if but I'm sure that the squads are big enough now and you can manage those squads, it's going to be a bit of a lull in terms of burnout. I think players are going to be starting to feel a bit more tired than they were because they didn't have that. You know, they've really played continuously, if you look at it really, as well, with those shorter breaks they've had. So that's my only bit of fear, really, as well. And, you know, it's going to be, obviously, if you look at Jack Grealish, you want him to play for Villa. Harry Kane, you want him playing for Tottenham because they're focal points, they're the pinnacle of both teams. And if they're losing them near the end of the season through injury, you know, so it's all about managing those players, and I'm sure they will be managed throughout the season. That's the importance of those squads. There's no way, you've got freaks like Ronaldo and Messi who can play a full season as well, and I've done that for the last 5-6 years, and they're playing every single game. But, you know, in general, the players need to be managed really well in terms of their training loads.
Something that I've always been interested in, as obviously not as a footballer, and it isn't what is it like to score a goal or anything like that, it's the medical process. I don't know whether I'm a bit of a nerd for even wondering about this, but obviously you've been on both sides as a player and then as a fitness coach as well. What actually goes into a footballer's medical? Is it difficult? Is it hard work?
It depends, really. I say it's hard work. I mean, it's not hard work in the sense of like you're doing something where you're doing a pre-season, but on a sports science side, I mean, obviously the players have the usual scans and certain exercises they've got to do to make sure that there's no pre-existing injuries and stuff like that. But playing myself as well, you know, we for instance, see how they are in terms of their fitness levels. They'll have a VO2 max test or some other test similar to that. They also have strength tests as well, balance and agility tests as well, to make sure that everything's in working order. So they are very, very comprehensive. We look at as well, I'll get data from the sports science department from that previous club as well, in terms of the amount of games they play, the training loads, and if possible as well, if I can get access to their GPS loads as well, in terms of the tests that they've been playing as well. But it is very, very comprehensive in terms of the stuff they have to do. And you know, don't get me wrong as well, so long as the player, I mean, you might be concerned where for instance, Gareth Bale, for instance, I know he's carrying a knock and everything else, but he hasn't played for, is it 4, 5, 6 months in terms of any real zest with Real Madrid, and I think he's got an injury. But the big factor for him now is they can't just throw him into games because of the intensity of the Premier League as well. He has to be looked after, so he's going through, yes, he might be carrying a little knock as well, but he's gone through an intensive training period, so he can make sure he can have the rigours of the rest of the season. So he'll be you'll see Gareth Bale, you know, in chip off as a sub, then you'll play 75 minutes and then, you know, might be taken out of the game and play a full game, and he might be rested to get him through that particular season as well, because it's important that they stay fit. So his medical would have probably showed for him as well, yes, he's probably carrying enough, but also as well his conditioning levels as well. It's one of the reasons why you're not going to probably see Gareth Bale till probably the end of October.
Obviously, I know that you don't drink or anything like that, but you played in a time where football got more serious, for want of a better word. The kind of, I've put down that the pre and post Arsene Wenger, that he came in and almost revolutionised the sports nutrition and how footballers were managed in terms of their fitness. What was that change like playing in the later 80s, early 90s, and then onwards?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult because at that particular time, it's just, you know, it was an issue for me. I was a young player at that particular time, and you just go with a young player. You just go with it. You know, okay. You know, oh, we kind of steak and chips for pre-match kind of thing. We've got a bit easy pasta and chicken, whatever it was at that particular time that we had. But so you just run with it as a player. You told us good for you, but it's the old school players as well. I've always done this. You know, I've always gone for a drink on a Tuesday, a blast out on a Tuesday kind of thing like that. And what happened is, when everyone was doing it, you know, in the early 80s, pre-Arsene Wenger, that particular time, everyone was on even keel. Arsene Wenger's coming in and revolutionised the way people people trained, where nutrition was important, how hydration and keeping fit and doing things right, getting the right amount of recovery, right amount of sleep, and all of a sudden Arsenal just gone whoosh like this, and all of a sudden people are going, hang on a minute, and I'm talking, that's only 1-2% difference, but all that's enough for them to make a massive difference in terms of when you're talking elite athletes. To us non-athletes anymore as well, you know, that's not really a great change, but in the elite world it is. So people had to match that. So clubs started to go, hang on a minute, what's the difference? What's he been doing? So it's really important that the players understood that. It was difficult. Some clubs didn't, because most of the teams were made up with old heads, old pros, would do anything to, you know, to try and avoid that, to be quite honest with you. I've seen it with my own eyes, and those are the ones that fell by the wayside, whether, you know, the Eastern clubs or whatever, or did get in the team. Then those did that embraced it, felt the benefits, you know, fitness became an important factor in football, because it is. Many a player with fantastic talent, and you know, but can't get around the field. If you've got somebody, you know, who's running rings around you in midfield, and you're just, you haven't got the ability or the agility to get around, you'll get found out, no matter what ability you've got technically as well. So the beauty of the better players are the ones with that agility, that technical ability, and can get around the football field as well. They used to talk about those are the better players, and that's what's happened now to football. Football now is a game of athletes, great athletes, whereas before now, to some extent, you know, you've got a team where, you know, technically some players aren't the best, but they're great athletes and can make a great living at the game because of that, you know, because of their athletic prowess. But the best ones are the ones, you know, who've got that and, you know, have got great technical ability as well. I mean, I look at Ollie Watkins, for instance, as well, and everyone's talking about this. Yeah, I've gone to record saying, you know, spent a lot of money on him. But I saw someone as a natural goal scorer. Everyone talks about scores, goals, yes. But I see an athlete as well. You see his movement, the way he runs. His physical presence as well, is really strong, fit lad. You know, he's got all the attributes of Calvin Lewin as well, the same as well. He's of Everton. He's a fantastic athlete as well. So he's added to the fact he can score goals as well with his physical abilities.
I think you've played across a number of generations as football's really, I mean, at a time when football went kind of mad in terms of the conditioning and what was expected from players. As you said, athletes kind of emerged into the sport, and now everyone, you'd assume everyone at the highest level is somewhat of an elite athlete. So how much has football changed during your career in terms of a conditioning approach, in terms of how serious players took that, the other side of it?
When I started playing football, the gym, don't tell you in the gym, was 4 weeks before the end of the season, because you know you're going to be on the beach somewhere and you want to look at your best. And that was it. That was the only time you really entered the gym. And then you realise the importance of doing your pre-activation work, your gym work as well, to make you not only fit and strong as well, but more resilient as a football player. Because a manager doesn't want a player who plays on a Saturday, has been absolutely outstanding, and come Tuesday or Wednesday is playing, he's kind of average because he's tired, and plays the following Saturday and gets injured because he has his fitness levels, because he's not strong enough to maintain or fit enough to maintain those levels. A manager would prefer a player who, you know, who obviously can do that, he's got great ability, can do it consistently, but he'd rather take someone who knows who can get through three games and, you know, give him a 7 out of 10 each week, than someone who give you a 9 out of 10 and don't see in the next two games. So I think that the importance of that, as you said, I've gone through the ranges as well with that now. Football fitness at that time was frowned upon as a football player as well. We hated pre-season. Well, I didn't personally, but that era hated pre-season. And quite rightly so, because the stuff that was being done at that time is quite archaic if you look at it now. But let me tell you something now. There's no player fitter during my time as a youngster compared to now. But what I would say to you, there's more athletes. I couldn't find a better fitter player than Gordon Cowans now, you know, when he was playing that place in the Premier League at this present moment. I mean, he was an absolute athlete in terms of his fitness levels that were phenomenal. But what you find now is that there's more of them, whereas the old days, the centre-halves of my generation were renowned to be the ones, or the goalkeepers were renowned to be the ones with one at the back, you know, breathe heavily, you can't move and everything else. But if you see most players now, if you see goalkeepers now, for instance, you know, the lean, strong centre-halves, a lot of Adonises as well in terms of their stature. Yeah, they're fantastic athletes as well. So, you know, I think that's changed as well in terms of the amount of players that in the squad who are there.
You mentioned the archaic methods there of the old pre-season days. I heard a story recently of Brian Clough having players run through nettles and stuff at Nottingham Forest. Is there any weird memories you can think of? And you look back now and think, why did we have to do that?
Yeah, I always remember Graham Taylor's first pre-season, and we, you know, at that time, Villa just got relegated, and there was this thing about player power at the time, and it all new disciplinarian. But at that time, Graham Taylor was not used on marathons or anything. He was even fitter than most of us, to be quite honest, anyone. And he took us through what was it, Sutton Park, first day of pre-season, and just set off and just started running. And lads got to put some warm up here, kind of jogging, then speed increased, and then like 4 to 5 minutes later, still going, and I'm talking like people like being left trailing, and Graham Taylor still bombing ahead, running around and everything else. He's doing his homework and everything else, and eventually at about 50 minutes we come back to him, we can see the trailer where the water was and everything else, and nearly finished there and everything else, and about 200 yards before everyone's sprinting to go in, Graham Taylor turns, deviates left and goes off, and we've gone for this most horrendous run. So he stopped us, we had to run up this hill, most I would say would have been a 400 metre hill that just went like that, I think about 8 times. That would be the hardest pre-season I have ever had in my entire life. So I mean, but insane, was it archaic at the time? I was probably one of the fittest I've ever been. My point with that is, yes, was fit, but my point is now with that is that times have changed, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. As I said before, that got us fit, but other means and ways of doing this now with a lot less chance of injury. You know, there were players will be dropping like flies at that particular time in terms of like people lost a lot of people through injury. Now with the monitoring, the way they're monitored, the way each individual person has their set levels to get, you're not telling the less conditioned players in the team that they have to keep up with the quickest person. They have their own metrics to get in that terms of it, to get them fit, you know, so they're really training against themselves to get themselves fit, not others.
We'll move on to match day then, away from pre-season. What does a match day look like for a footballer? How much of it is planned in terms of you need to get this much sleep, you need to eat these things, this is what the warm-up looks like? What do you remember of that?
People talk about match day minus three, match day minus two, match day minus one. That's how much planning goes in terms of the amount of training, the amount of intensity, what food, what supplements are going to be having. Whereas if we talk about this day now with elite athletes, elite footballers, they'll have, you know, their supplements set out ready for the match day. You've got to be taking this is the right thing for you in terms of training, the right intensity. They've already sorted out with the coaching, that they've been planning the week, what the training session is going to be, the intensity of the training session, what team's going to do, what the rest of squad members, what they're going to do, what each individual probably needs to do in terms of their own metrics. Again, we talk about food as well, you know, they eat diets now that are specific to them. So in the actual canteen, I call it a restaurant now, in terms of the foods that the players have, they'll be given specific diets as well in terms of what they can't eat. And don't get me wrong, it's a variety of food, it's not boring food as well. I mean, I'm going to Villa Park last season, the training at Bodmore Heath there last year, and the food there is first class and have a good variety, but it's set out specifically to, you know, the needs of that particular day, whether it's a couple of days for training where they need more carb-based foods, or if it's gone, you know, it's late, it's early on a week, terms of recovery, whether it's more protein based as well. A lot goes into it in terms of that. And, you know, and 24 hours before a game as well, before match day as well, obviously the training is virtually nothing in terms of intensity, you know. Yes, they will still train at a decent intensity, especially in a game, but it's short, sharp, and it'll be done. And of course, we're doing set pieces as well regarding that. But again, diet and nutrition and recovery is key. You know, I think most teams now as well, home away, will stay in a hotel as well. So, you know, the players keep together in terms of that now, so as a squad as well, to make sure that they get the right sleep. Because externally away from that, you know, if you go back home and get recovery and you've just got a newborn or a young child, a child's not well or whatever, and you don't get much sleep or whatever as well, that's going to affect the way you play as well. So, you know, that's why one of the reasons why players are taken away to hotels, yes, to control what they eat as well and to make sure that they're there at that particular time, but also as well that they're getting the right amount of sleep and eating correctly.
So we've spoken a lot at length on this podcast, actually, and it's really interesting about the conditioning, the fitness, and what goes into kind of the, I wouldn't say the unseen side of the player's career, but it's one of the most important parts. If you're not fit, you're not going to play, and thus you're not going to be a footballer in front of everyone and be able to perform in front of everyone. But I guess one thing that we're speaking a lot more about now is the mental health, Tony, and you've talked a lot about suffering depression as a footballer. So what were you going through at one of your worst moments as a footballer mentally? What was the challenges you faced, and how did you were you able to deal with that at the time?
Yeah, at the time, I would have been. I mean, I can remember a couple of occasions. I think one was when I was at Villa at one particular time, and I think I was going through a bad time in terms of playing. You know, in terms of the pressures of playing, you know, you're not playing well, fans are getting on your back, the team's not doing well at a particular time. And I think it was actually, I would say, you know, in my mid-20s at that particular time, early 20s at that particular time. And it was a taboo to even talk about, because of footballers, you're fit, strong, healthy, macho, you know, you earn great money, you should. What boys have you got? You know, when you just got there and perform, and you know, you can add the adulation of the crowd, it's a fantastic thing. But that isn't the case, you know, like in everyone else, is that you don't know what's going behind closed doors in terms of that. For me, at that particular time, it was that the pressure of performing, you know, at a particular time. And at that time, we did have a sports psychologist. But at that time, sport, that was a big taboo. Oh, you're seeing a shrink kind of thing. You're weak if you have to see that. And I always remember that I was seeing a sports psychologist at that time as well, once or twice a week, was asking for that. But it was all hush-hush. Nobody talked about it. And it wasn't, until left clubs at the same time, I didn't even know that the likes of other players, I won't name them because I'm fair, there's a couple of other players who were actually seen them at the same time as I was as well, and I didn't have a clue. But that's how it was hush-hush it was, and it was, I'm thinking now, it's not, it should be in place, you'd be able to actually talk to other players about it. And if I had that opportunity to talk to players at that time, then perhaps, you know, things would be a lot better. My other occasion was at Wolves at the time. I was at the time the record signing. And before I kicked the ball in earnest, you know, I picked up a crucial injury. I was out for a year, tried to get back again and picked up another injury. That went virtually another full season of that. And don't care what you want as a footballer, all I wanted to do was play football. And let me something out. If you're in the gym and you're on a bike and you're cycling, you look out and you see the players training, the players, you know, on a football field, and all you want to do is that. It's tough. I've been wanting to be a footballer since the age of 10 years of age, and being able to do that and to get that taken away from you, it's a horrible feeling. And at a particular time, you can see by his face, it doesn't matter, he's picking up his money, you know, he always injured all the time, he doesn't want to play for Wolves and everything at a particular time. It's not rubbish, to be quite honest with you. I just want to play football, full stop. And, you know, and that was a really, really, really dark time for me. And I mean, a really bad time, you know, and I think I had to have probably 2-3 weeks off away from it as well, you know, to get help as well in terms of that. That was so difficult. And at the time, I'll tell you this, that time, a bit later on with Wolves as well, just before I'd left Wolves as well, there was given opportunity, well, you're going to struggle to get back with this, you know, you might consider retiring, you know, and I didn't want to take that option. I mean, I was insured at a particular time as well, and could have easy option and done that. But for my love of the game, I wanted to play. I didn't want to have any regrets of doing that. So I tried to come back from that as well. That was my third year at Wolves, about a year before that. And, you know, and it was, don't get me wrong, I think Wolves were fantastic to me there as well. I mean to be honest, it was a great place, but at that particular time, it was a really, really dark time. And players now, are going through that as well. You know, everyone talks about the amount of money they earn and everything else, but I'll just give you Jack Grealish, for instance, the probably the most recognised player in the Midlands in terms of that, perhaps of the whole of the country now as well. But, you know, nothing better for him. He can't go through to down to a shop to pick up a newspaper or whatever you do, or buy a bag of crisps and everything else, because he'll inundate it. I mean, there's nothing wrong. And if you did go in days, he'd love to. He'd sign every single autograph. But does that now? Just imagine he does that now, right? And he's signed 100 autographs, and he turns away and misses a young kid who's 8 years of age and didn't even see him. Next thing you see in his paper, Grealish ignored me, kind of thing. You get that. And it happens, and it would do. You can't win. Players go into social media simply as well because they can't. It's access to their lives because they can't be with those particular people. They want, you know, this is their thing, this is what I'm doing, you know, this is, and that's why they're so popular. But it's, you know, because of that as well, you get certain keyboard warriors as well and make their life difficult. It's a hard thing as well for them as well. And there's nothing depressing in whatever you're saying as well. Yeah, to be abused, whether it's racially, whether it's whatever reason, back to play is for me bang out of order, you know, and it does affect you, and it can affect you as well, because it, you know, for the, you know, the 1,000 people who say lovely things about you or whatever, you know, you don't take one person like that, and it can get you down.
Sounds like the YouTube comments, Tony. That's what happens to us. You only get one negative comment, you go, oh.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to being injured for a moment there. Obviously, you can't speak for other footballers, but someone who's so into their fitness, is it more frustrating for you when you get injured because you know almost what your body needs to recover and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be out here for so long, and you understand the physical process?
I don't know if I'm unique, Dan, regarding that, because I remember when I was getting treatment, one of the reasons I'd become a go to sports science and fitness was simply because I wanted to understand how the body works. So, you know, if I picked up my knee injury and everything else like that, it wasn't the case, okay, the physio go, well, yeah, you need to go on a bike for, you know, 15 minutes. Why do I? And it wasn't because I didn't want to do it. It felt, tell me why. I wanted to know the biomechanics of it, you know, why is it 20 minutes, you know, the analogy, everything you need to know about that. And I had a thirst and a quest for it. So are you going to speak to the wrong person? Because for me, an understanding of the injury was critical and key. And when I look back as well now, when I became fitness coach, I was on the ground to Wolves, and people saying, oh, ironic, and you played 21 games, 26 games for Wolves, you know, and he's our fitness injured most of the time, as a fitness coach. Well, you know, it can be stupid, really, because I have an understanding of what plays. It makes sense to me, you know. I went to university, studied it, and also on a personal level, you know, I understand players who get injured, you know, what they're going through and how I can help them. I mean, that was a key thing for me, was the fact that being a fitness coach and having played the game and having experiences that I had as well, I can put that through. So I had a buy-in as a fitness coach, because I had respect, but from that respect, you have to be good at your job, and as soon as you're not good at your job, you get found out, and, you know, and that's the case, it doesn't matter, respect goes through the window, but it's good to have that buy-in, and, you know, and I think one of the things I had with players was an understanding of players, you know, I understood, for instance, if you're a sports scientist who had never dealt with footballers before, and you could be the best sports scientist in the world, and have, you know, degrees, and coming out your head, and you look at a player's stats, and you see him winning the game, and go, he should be doing this, but he's not doing that kind of thing. There's other factors to that. And having played the game, I understand those factors, so I look into both those as well. I speak to the player and say, okay, you know, what's your beef? What's your, you know, what other issues are there? What's, you know, what's going on? And I can have that understanding of the players, and I think that's critical. It's not just, as you said, just doing the job, ticking the box, and yeah, you've got to do those ones, but an understanding of each individual person.
I just want to end with a couple of quick fire questions, if you don't mind. The best trainer that you've played with, and the best trainer that you would have coached.
Oh, that's tough. That is really, really tough. I would say, played with, I say the best trainer, I would say Gordon Cairns. Definitely. That comes straight to mind as a player. Who I've trained, there's been a fair few. Matt Jarvis comes straight to mind from Wolves. I think he's a pure athlete. Yes, he's injured and everything else, but he's an absolute athlete. Andy Keogh, these ones ring a bell in terms of fitness levels as well. Carl Henry, Wolves as well, Wolves captain at a particular time. Absolute athlete, and he was one as well. He was a natural athlete as well, because he was the ones who would actually give me that stick for. He'd be the one in my ear all the time. What are we doing this for? what an athlete he was, you know what I mean? He was fantastic. But there's far too many. The beauty of you know, being involved in football at a particular time, and as we say, well, I find it difficult, is because, you know, I think it's a rarity to actually say that there wasn't really a bad person in terms of fitness. The people I work with at different varying levels were strong at different things, at different fitness levels.
What we want to do here, Tony, is ask who is the worst trainer, but I think we've been on positive vibes all this episode. So what I wanted to spin that and say, maybe he was the best player on the football pitch, but not maybe the best trainer who was able to kind of turn it on.
I can tell you who the worst person I have straight away as well, because a player called Chris Inade. He was an absolute, he's only a youngster, he was at Sheffield United at the time, and an absolute beast. Adonis, a striker, you saw him playing the games, only I think he came from France or Belgium, I think it was. Neil Warnock found an absolute gem at that particular time. But let me tell you something now, the laziest player I've ever seen. We talked about the bleep test, and I always remember doing the bleep and start off, and I think we got to something stupid like level 6 or 7, whatever. Not being funny, granted, you two guys could do that level if you wasn't. No, trust me.
You've given me a lot of knowledge.
and he was honestly, he pulled that, and I looked at him. And it wasn't a case of Paul that, you know, your players pull that and go, I ain't doing this kind of thing, bothering. He was literally collapsed on the floor, as in tired, absolutely ridiculous. And I thought, oh my word. And in the end, we had to, what do you call it? We had to take him. That's the only player ever, because we were renowned, because the players used to have programs to do to come through back to pre-season, because the levels that we wanted him to get, he's the only one didn't reach level. So he's the only one for the first couple of weeks who couldn't use kick of football, because he was staying with me doing one-to-one work. He was that on feet. And that's a rarity. That's the only experience I've ever had in terms of that now. It is a rarity.
But we can't let you go without mentioning Jack Grealish, Tony. Of course, we know he's a good player, but I think I was going to ask you the question, who, since Villa started the season, who have you seen that's kind of, you look at him and you go, that guy's fit, that guy's on it. And I think it's got to be Grealish, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yes, I look at the Villa team now and you say that, but I saw the development of Grealish 2 years ago in terms of his physicality. We all know about his ability. But one thing was that, you know, people talk about saying that it goes down too easy. Not being funny. He's hacked down, so why is he standing up for? I just don't get people say that. I would say 99% of the time, he's actually failed. Yeah, it's my point. But what you can see is someone who's physically strong. He's, if you look at him there, the way he runs as quick with the ball as he's without it, and his acceleration of the mark is exceptional. He's not a Sterling in terms of, you know, pick the ball up and it's gone like that. But his ability running with the ball, the way he manipulates the ball, is fantastic. But, you know, when we talked about the size of Jack Grealish's calves, yeah, they're massive as well. But that's, you know, if you look at his upper body strength as well, you know, he looks really lean, really strong. And that's really helped him develop as a footballer as well, because it's made him more, not talk about his physicality and the way he looks, but it has made him a really resilient player. So I look at a player now who could play 90 minutes, we talked about there, play 90 minutes Saturday, 95 minutes Saturday, can play 95 minutes Tuesday, can play 95 minutes Saturday, and still be the best player. Mm-hmm. And that's the only the accolade I can give him, because of his performances as well, because he's had a look. We all know about his ability as well, but he's added that to his armoury for sure. I mean, and then you talk about his fitness levels as well, it's through the roof in terms of that. People questioned as well, you know, early doors as well, what does it offer you defensively as well? Because people go, you know, we don't, Jack Grealish can do that side. Can you get back, you know, and help us pull back out? I mean, he's proven out his ability to be able to run the 95 minutes as it is now. He fits strong and getting whacked in. Trust me, when you get whacked, the amount of times he does, and still be able to get up and do it again and do it continuously, week in, week out, you have to be physically strong and well conditioned.
There we go. I feel like that's the point of the podcast, to kind of just kind of dive deeper onto something we might not ever touch on, which is fitness. We say, is someone fit, or they got an injury, they're out 4 weeks, that's it. So now we've got the full story done. And I can't thank you enough, Tony. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys. We enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to AVFC Extra, an additional dose of Aston Villa content for you, brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast team. If you enjoyed the episode, please do get in touch with us, get involved in the comment sections, tweet us at Claret Blue Pod, or leave us a review on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. We'll catch you again very soon with some more content. Until then, up the Villa.